Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
Attorney, radio, talk show host, Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show, 77 WABC.
My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love. I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, my hands are shaking.
It is a beautiful New York hot day. Still not as hot as it was earlier this week, but still nice out. And we're nice and comfortable in these beautiful facilities here, given to us by NJDiet.com. This is the brand new Curtis and Ebony show. And we opened with All Shook Up because that's exactly how I would describe Senator Rand Paul. Yesterday he appeared as a guest on our my other show on the Fox News Specialist, 5 to 6 on Fox News Channel. And he was, of course, there, an eyewitness at the tragic shooting yesterday that took place and injured, I think, up to six people now, they're saying, including Republican Congressional Whip Steve Scalise. He's currently in critical condition. But Rand Paul was there with his own two eyes, and he's from Kentucky. The senator from Kentucky tends to have a pro-gun stance, Curtis, and he had this to say on air.
Our lives were saved by the Capitol Hill police. Had they not been there, I think it would have been a massacre. And you are completely helpless. And, you know, having no self-defense and no way to get to somebody, the field was basically a killing field. I mean, if you were to run out there while the shooter was still shooting, he would have shot anybody. He was shooting people as far away as right field.
Now, Curtis, he gave that interview with us several hours after this thing happened at 7-something in the morning yesterday, and still he was visibly shaken and upset and very kind of out of sorts. But you also know what it's like to have that helpless feeling.
Well, forgive me if I'm jaded and very immune to his trauma that he's gone through, because Rand Paul is not only a Republican, a conservative, he's a libertarian. Yes, and actually he promotes gun usage, and that's okay. But then again, there are complications to gun usage. Guns that are used by people to protect themselves for the right reasons, and guns that get into the hands of nutnicks like this guy from Belleville, Illinois, who took two guns with him to the nation's capital to hunt Republicans because he's angry at Donald Trump. And I say to myself, okay, welcome to the club, Rand Paul, every day in America. I'm sure there are families feeling that today who were related to the UPS employees who were killed by that nut job there
yesterday.
And this goes on a regular basis. Nobody wants to address the mental health issues, so naturally we just make it a gun control issue. Well, I'm one. I don't carry a gun. I could have carried a gun after I got shot up five times with hollow point bullets. Monday will be the anniversary, June 19th.
How many years, Curtis?
Well, since 1992, June 19th, 1992. And I was given the right to carry at that point. Because
I guess you earned it, right? You earned the right to carry.
And it's not easy to do here in the city.
Nope.
I chose not to. That's my choice. But I would never deny another person the right to carry a weapon, especially if they've been a victim of crime. But immediately it gets into a gun control issue, and I'm saying to myself, really? This screwball, this follower of the alta caca Bernie Sanders, he's like the nuts on the left who go off the reservation, just like we've had nuts on the right who go off the reservation. So instead of dealing with these mental health issues that plague a lot of Americans, and what can we do to sort of get them back on track so that they could be sound and rational, sane and sober, it becomes an issue of, no, you can't take my guns. And in fact, if you notice, as Rand Paul was shaking, yeah, it's understood. An average American
crazy.
Faced with that kind of situation, potential carnage as he described, but obviously serious injuries, especially for Scalise, who faces a long road to recovery. But I got to tell you, people go through that every day in America, and then immediately it's a gun control issue instead of, wait a second, the gunmen or the gun persons, what was their stability like? Did they have mental health issues? Were they screwballs? Were they crackpots? Here's a guy in Belleville that we hear from a neighbor would go out into his backyard, start capping shots while kids were playing in the yard next door. That's not responsible gun ownership.
No, it's not.
Under any definition. And so whether you were a strong Second Amendment advocate or you were into gun control, I think everybody could agree on that, that this guy had some screws loose upstairs. And what, if any, measures did he ever take to get therapy or to get back on track? Was there anyone who suggested that to him? That hasn't even entered into the discussion.
So you know what, Curtis? Now you're bringing up the broader important conversation about the stigma that is still very much associated with mental health. Now, I am a divorced woman living in New York City by myself. I go to a therapist every week, you know? And so it's funny, Curtis, when I go to my therapist's office, she's in a building and you got to sign in at front desk, you know, safety precautions. And she goes, well, Ebony, because you're on air, you know, you don't have to put your name. I said, therapist, I don't give a damn to put my name because you know what? That's important. That's good. I openly talk about the fact that I see a therapist. I think you're crazy if you live in this country and you don't see a therapist and you can see one, because it's always helpful. And I think it's important that we start talking about this openly, Curtis. People have got to get past this stigmatized notion that if you seek some help around anything that's stressful in your life, that you're a nut job crazy person.
As an example, Manhattan, the island of Manhattan, per capita per person, happens to be a very wealthy area for the most part. There are more people who utilize the help of psychoanalysts and psychiatrists than anywhere in the world. And yet it also has a lot of successful people that we would look at their lives and say, well, they're very successful.
A lot of times that success is stress.
Right. But professionally and personally, but absolutely, they get help. Ron Artest, who had anger management issues, when the L.A. Lakers won the NBA championship, first person he thanked, wasn't God, wasn't his coach, his mother, those are the normal three.
Especially for black folks, we love thanking God.
Right, but he was thanking his shrink.
Yeah.
And he needed a shrink, if you knew Ron Artest, because from times he would flip the script.
Totally.
He had anger management issues against his girlfriend in Queens at the Queensbridge Projects when he was going to St. John's University. Anger management issues. He got into a huge fight with the Detroit Pistons when he was an Indiana Pacer. Well, I can go on and on.
Wait, is he the one that choked out the coach?
No. That's Sprewell.
That was Sprewell. Okay.
Right. That's Sprewell.
Okay.
Who had anger management. But you see, the point is, a lot of Americans have these issues.
Almost everybody I know, Curtis, could use a good therapist. I mean, it's not anything to be all in your feelings about. You got to get it out. Now, you convolute and bring up the gun control issue, and that's interesting as well, because it's at least now being reported, at least according to ABC News, that it was a legal purchase. That this guy, because he had a couple of priors, but nothing serious, and I kind of thought that he would be able to purchase something legally. No felony convictions. Able to purchase this gun. So they're saying that he had this SKS 7.62 assault rifle, and of course people are all on Twitter. It was a semi-automatic.
Okay.
It wasn't a full automatic.
But let's suggest, Ebony, it was completely legal.
Two
weapons. The rifle
and
obviously
and Wesson
the handgun.
Pistol. Yes.
But there are other ways you can get guns. You can buy them from friends. You can go to a flea market. You can go to a gun show and not have to register. And I know people say, no.
I've
been to gun
shows
and people were not filling out any paperwork. There are such a variety of ways that you can get guns. But to me, this is not a gun control issue. It's like, let's look at the individual. He is responsible for this action. It is not the left. It is not the right. It is not the heated rhetoric. Personal responsibility when you cross that line. Whatever happened to personal responsibility? Now when anyone commits a crime or anyone goes over the edge, we have to, what was the cause? Oh, maybe it was the heated rhetoric, you know, of his own mentor, his own guiding light, you know, Bernie the Altacaca Sanders. The answer is no. It's this guy, because if that were the case, there were hundreds of thousands of people supporting Bernie the Altacaca Sanders. They didn't go out and get a gun, travel to Washington, D.C., and, quote, try to shoot the enemy, in this case, the Republicans. So
no,
why not hold him culpable instead of giving him a pass?
Curtis, people love the blame game. When stuff like this happens, everybody wants to put blood on somebody's hands because nobody wants to admit the horrifying fact that what you're suggesting could be right. That there are individuals among us, Curtis, that are so close to the edge that they can just flip the script.
Look what just recently happened in London. Strict gun control. And yet, what did the jihadists do, the three jihadists?
Used a car.
Right, car first.
Stab.
And then just took out knives and started to stab as many people as they can.
Because evil will move forward by any means possible.
Right,
so I agree with you. And also, even with the best gun control laws, People that want guns are going to get guns anyway, to your point.
Right. So why not look at each individual case, put the individual or individuals under a microscope and said, what were the contributing elements here? If you look at this guy's history, you see a series of times where he has crossed the line and showed an extreme way of dealing with things that one could have easily said, suggested. Hey, look, he got thrown off the community board. He was writing letters constantly to the local newspaper and challenging anybody else who would dare condemn him or suggest that he was, he was off his rocker. The guy had issues. But then again, we don't want to deal with all of that because hush, hush, mush, mush. And, this goes back to my very first presidential vote. I voted for George McGovern. I will defend that to the day I die against that crook Richard Nixon who tried to subvert our democracy, our constitutional republic. Second thing is when McGovern chose Eggleton, Thomas Eggleton, the U.S. Senator of Missouri, nobody knew that he had had at one time some serious issues with depression that resulted in him getting shock therapy.
Right.
That helped him. That resolved his issue. The moment we all heard that, and we dropped Thomas Eggleton like there was no tomorrow, all of a sudden McGovern, who said, I'm 110% behind him, got rid of Eggleton and brought on one of the Kennedy family members.
Oh, yeah, you could survive a sex scandal in American politics, but, let you have had a couple therapy sessions.
So that was 72.
It's a problem.
It is now 2017, and we're still not dealing with mental-related health issues, because whereas here in Manhattan, it's open, people get therapy, they get help. In the heartland of America, it's still something that nobody ever wants to acknowledge or publicly say, hey, this helped me. Mm-mm. God forbid somebody actually say, I need a mental health moment. I really need to take some time and get some help here, and I'll be back on track. I'll be back soon.
I believe in personal days, too, Curtis. I mean, look, stuff is stressful out here in the streets. Seriously, I don't care if you're in New York, you're in Ohio, South Carolina. It doesn't matter. There are real life challenges. It's too much. And I think this is the issue, Curtis. I think that some people knew this guy was suspect, but they didn't want to say anything. You know, you say something. That goes for mental health, too.
Well, especially if you know the nut job has access to guns, because then you think he's going to come hunting for you. Let's go to Steve, who's calling from Airmont. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Stevie.
Good afternoon. Hey, Ebony, I just have one question before I start talking. Do you know what an Alticaca is?
Curtis is training me on these great vernaculars. Context clues would tell me it's not a good thing.
It's not a bit. No. It's just a way, a Yiddish expression for an old person.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, Curtis we're in a Yiddish tutorial with Curtis.
All right. So now let's get to some substance. Okay. So this whole thing. Can we have, I would like to have sane and rational rules and regulations. So I call it gun control, okay? At this point, so yesterday, including San Francisco, now we have 155 mass shootings in the United States since January 1st. I find that number to be disturbingly high. Okay. So how about this? I think that we could agree, everyone could agree, that there is some kind of a problem. I
don't think everybody would agree with you, Steve. My colleagues would tell you we don't have a gun problem. They would say we have a people problem. They would say for sure people kill people, not guns. I get that argument, but here's my position on it, Curtis. Why does anybody need a magazine with 50 clips in it? That's just, you ain't shooting no deer. You ain't knocking down no Pepsi cans with that type of arsenal. You're just not. So I can respect people's right to fish and hunt and have gun usage for sport. I don't have any problems with that. I even think people should have a right to bear arms and protect themselves. Absolutely. I told you, I'm literally thinking about it myself. Because I'm one of the privileged people, because of my circumstance and what I do for a living and the threats I receive, I could probably make some phone calls and bypass it.
So you would get rid of the banana clips?
Yeah, that's me. Because I don't think it serves the spirit of the constitutional amendment that talks about why we have guns. We're not militia.
Open up the phone lines on that. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. That's Ebony K. Williams. This is your new show here on WABC's lineup from Monday through Fridays, 12 to 3, right here on your place to be, 770 AM WABC.
for your midday.
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony, exclusively.
Bring the noise!
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Well, in Georgia, we have laws that allow you to carry a weapon to protect yourself. I mean, until you're shot at, you don't know what the feeling is to be that vulnerable. Somebody actively shooting at you, targeting you, trying to shoot you, and you have no way of defending yourself. In Georgia, we have a concealed carry law that allows individual citizens to keep a weapon with them and in their car. Had my staff member who was there been in Georgia, he would have normally carried a weapon in his car. I carry a weapon in my car. And he was pinned down in his vehicle but had a shot on the shooter.
Well, I know you got to love that, right, Curtis? We got a Republican Congressman, Barry Loudermilk, saying, of course, that the lawmakers, they should have the special treatment. You know, they should be able to protect themselves and common folks like me and you.
Didn't I predict that yesterday?
You literally called it.
Would take the position that they should all be strapped, which, again, that's an argument that should be made, that should all be in the discussion. But again, I noticed the way all these congressmen, even those that weren't at the scene of the softball practice, are reacting. They were all traumatized. This is what families go through every day in America. This is what whole neighborhoods, whole communities in rural areas, suburban areas, urban areas go through. Welcome to the club.
But what about the argument, Chris? Because I was thinking about this yesterday. My mother, of course, agrees with you. I think she likes you more than me already. But what about the argument that as lawmakers, they have special targets? Because many of them are hated, controversial, like federal judges, you know, they enjoy special.
Sure.
Maybe because they are in these heightened positions of risk would be the argument. They should have the special treatment around the laws.
And that's understood. And I realize they are going to get targeted by the kooks. But it would be nice to say, in addition to getting additional security, which they're all going to get now as a result of this shooting.
Maybe, Curtis. I don't know. They didn't get any special security after Congresswoman Gabby Giffords.
Yeah, but remember, that was out in Tucson. People said, okay. Oh, yeah, everybody is strapped in Arizona.
Because this is in D.C. Okay.
Right, but it's right in the heart of D.C. I think they're going to end up all with more security, or at least have it available to them. I just wish that they would have a serious discussion about how we avoid the mental health issues and then the personal responsibility that goes into making that decision. Again, I mentioned it yesterday. Just a few miles away, Hinckley resides. The guy who tried to kill Reagan almost successfully did. He was locked up in a mental institution for the criminally insane. He then went home on weekends after a while to mama, went bowling with mommy. Yeah. Now he's home. He's all alone on his own. He had a serious mental health issue. Somehow, some way, it appears, at least to almost everyone, he has recovered from that. Is that a possibility? We haven't even had an open discussion about that as being
sure
a possibility.
Haven't. Sure have. No, because I don't think, again, I think, first of all, it hits close to home, Curtis. Every single person in this country, either themselves or is close to a family member that has some real mental health problems, and it's taboo, and people don't want to talk about it. And so until people get over that, we're not going to.
I could have had a permit to carry in New York City after I got shot.
Well,
I chose not to because with all the arguments I get into every day, I would shoot people on a regular basis. I realized Curtis Sliwa has anger management issues. You should not be carrying a gun, Curtis. Let's go to Barbara in New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Barb?
Hi, Curtis. First of all, I'd like to express my condolences to you on the loss of your mom.
Thank you.
I'm not the brightest person, but I do have a certain amount of intelligence. I am a retired RN. I have a son who is a state trooper and a son-in-law who is in community law enforcement. And I'm a little nervous, so I'm going to try to be as articulate as possible. First of all, with gun control, I feel that it is generalized when we talk about gun control. I'm confused. Gun control, to me, sounds like it is against the Second Amendment. What I feel is that there are people who buy guns on the black market and illegally, and there are assault weapons that should not be had. But our legislators seem to lump everything under the title of gun control, and I really wish they would be more specific so that people could get a grasp on what it is that needs to be controlled.
Well, first off, the worst thing that happens is if you mention, it was an assault weapon. What? What do you automatic? Are you suggesting it was not an automatic weapon?
Yeah, saying, they get really in their feelings.
Guy caps 50 shots. Okay, what do you? It's automatic.
Semi-automatic. Right, right. So it's a semi.
They start splitting hairs, and I'm like, come on, please don't insult all of us. There's a problem here of too much capacity that you can fire too many bullets on one occasion by just pulling the trigger on a few occasions, and then it's like just spraying the area. But anyway, we have a very special guest joining us up
very
next.
Very special. I can't wait as we pivot the conversation.
Ted Nugent.
Into, to the rhetoric component.
Who's going to defend his statement about then-President Barack Obama that he should suck on my machine gun.
Well, yeah. Well, we talked about this on The Specialist, and I can't wait to continue the conversation with Ted Curtis, because personally, that sounds like a threat to me. But I can't wait to see what Uncle Ted has to say. But up first, we've got news headlines from Deborah Valentine.
Bring the noise!
Studio View and WABCRadio.com.
In the spirit of trying to connect.
A great way to see an angel and a beauty.
There's no doubt.
Take a listen. Take a listen. Take a peek.
Turn it up.
Curtis and Ebony, 77 WABC.
And you're back with the brand new Curtis and Ebony Show. This is 77 WABC. We're here every day now, Monday through Friday, 12 to 3. And we are joined by a very, very special guest. Mr. Ted Nugent himself is called in because, you know, we're going to transform this conversation around the horrific shooting of Whip Steve Scalise yesterday and others to the rhetoric. Curtis, many people are asking, well, maybe the rhetoric of mainstream media. The decapitations, as shown by Kathy Griffin, this type of hateful language is responsible for what happened, the attack on Republicans yesterday. But Mr. Ted Nugent, we want to thank you for joining us. And when certainly you and I have had this conversation, and I'm looking forward to continuing it, around how much responsibility the hateful political rhetoric has on what people are doing these days.
Well, number one, thanks for having me on, Ebony. Is Curtis there with you now?
Curtis, of course, is right here, of course.
Well, both of you, I'd like to just express how much I admire both of you for your intellect and how you stand up for, you know, goodwill and decency, and you take a logical approach to these things. And I think this subject matter is critical right now. I think we've reached critical mass. I tend to agree. You and I had a bit of a confrontation because of some of the language I've used, and I have reevaluated my approach, even though I'm a street fighter. I'm from Detroit.
Yeah.
We use language in the street. We use certain harsh terms. But at the tender age of 69, my wife has convinced me that I just can't use those harsh terms. I cannot, and I will not, and I encourage even my friends slash enemy on the left in the Democrat and liberal world that we have got to be civil to each other, that the whole world is watching America, where you have the God-given right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and we have got to be more respectful to the other side. But I have to clarify, we really are angry. We don't believe, we cannot believe that people on the left don't want secure borders, that this is crazy to us. But I am here to tell you, Ebony, your civil discourse from one side to the left and the right, I think, is a shining example. We have just got to take a deep breath. Remember, I am the Motor City Madman.
You are.
I didn't just write Wango Tango. I meant it. I mean, but I'm going to take a deep breath, and I am going to back it down. And if it gets fiery, if it gets hateful, I'm going away. I'm not going to engage in that kind of hateful rhetoric anymore.
Let me tell you this, Ted. In this moment, what you've done at the tender age of 69, for you to be able to say as a grown, self-respecting man that the things I said in the past about Barack Obama eating a gun, sucking a gun, Hillary Clinton being decapitated, for you to say that that was going too far. And again, I want to commend you and acknowledge you are not backing away from your political position of opposition to policies that you think are not in alignment with the best interests of this country. And that's what's important in this moment, ladies and gentlemen, to realize you do not have to compromise your political position and still show some level of human decency in the critique that doesn't go so far in the gutter as to even suggest the threatening of life, and the harming of individuals whom you simply politically disagree with. So I want to thank you for this moment, because this is the example, Ted, for the rest of our country to follow.
Well, I've got something in the neighborhood of 20 million Facebookers, and we have quite a dialogue every day, and I'm getting ready for the greatest tour of my life. So I'm not trying to make excuses, but when I made those wild-ass comments on stage against the then-Senator Hillary Clinton and then-Senator Barack Obama, I don't know if you can grasp the degree of adrenaline and intensity and sheer over-the-top animal spirit and attitude that I live on stage. But I've got to take that deep breath, because the energy and the focus and priority that I put into creating great rhythm and blues, great music, rock and roll with this greatest band in the world, I have to be in tune and in time with my bass player and drummer. Now I've got to get my psyche in tune that I can still hold the ground, and I can be feisty, I can be fiery, I can be passionate.
Nobody's going to take that away.
I will avoid anything that can be interpreted as condoning or referencing violence. I have never referenced violence. I've said some smart-ass stuff in the past. And
well,
you,
come on,
and
Ted.
I talked about it.
Yeah. I think some people might have certainly taken it that way, for sure.
Well,
yeah.
Let me trace back my history with Ted Nugent, the Motor City Madman, who has street cred in the city of Detroit, where I went in the mid-'80s when Coleman Young was the mayor, to form the first Guardian Angel Patrols there. And got locked up in the Detroit House of Correction just for organizing there, because the mayor decided he's the mayor, he could do that. And I must tell you that the terminology you use, which I'm familiar with in the streets, Ted, when you said about the former president Barack Obama, suck on my machine gun, I hear that on a regular basis from homies and others who will tell me, oh yeah, you're going to be sucking on my toolie, my gun, any minute. So you do recognize how that could send across the worst of possible messages.
Yes, and I'm acknowledging that now. And again, I have to give a lot of credit to my incredible wife, my queen of the forest, Shemaine.
Yeah, I got the chance to meet her, Ted, when you came on and did the Fox News specialist. Just a real lovely woman. And I think what's important in this moment, and you're referencing it as well, Curtis, this is not about abandoning your beliefs. This is not about just pretending differences don't exist and having kumbaya moments artificially. This is about us being grown-ups, all of us, despite our political positions, and saying, you know what? I don't like your health care plan. I don't like your immigration stance. I don't like where you are on gun control, the Second Amendment issues. But we're not going to advocate for the decapitation. We're not going to advocate for lynching and hanging and all these things that, like we were talking earlier in the show, Curtis, some people are kind of cuckoo crazy tendencies already. And so when they see someone of your status, Ted, someone of your gravitas with those two machine guns on the stage suggesting Obama suck a gun, they're not thinking clearly. They're not seeing it as a metaphor. They're not seeing it as artistic expression. Somebody looking at Kathy Griffin with that decapitated ISIS style picture, they're not seeing art. They're seeing hate, and they're seeing it as a cue to move forward in the most gruesome of ways.
You're absolutely correct, but let me clarify too, and I'm glad Curtis is there, because you have to realize I was born in Detroit in 1948, and I was there in the heat and the fire of the 67 riots, and I was on the side of my black brothers, the Funk Brothers, the Motown Heroes, and so I have been in the eye of the storm. And as Curtis clarified, and it's important we never forget this, when those kind of savage remarks are made, especially on a rock and roll stage, they're not meant literally. I don't want anybody's lips on my machine gun. Those weren't machine guns, by the way.
Okay.
They were airsoft guns, but they sure look cool. what I want to convey, and Ebony, you're right, I'm not only not backing off my constitutional fight, because my politics are constitutional. My politics
That's
are
fine.
Bill of Rights.
Yep,
my
no
politics
problem.
Are Declaration of Independence and Emancipation Proclamation. I am so simple. I'm
oh, I certainly like the Emancipation Proclamation. Yeah,
state.
I'm a big fan of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm actually increasing my activism because I see the division in this country. But again, I'd love to discuss in detail at a future date why we are angry and how confused we are. Now, we can be confused, but we are not allowed to
incite. It's incite. Yes. And I think that's the thing. And of course, as an attorney, that's the test, right? Free speech is absolutely protected up and until it gets to that magical threshold, gentlemen, where now we're talking about inciting violence. And I'm not saying you did that, Ted. We know ultimately you were cleared by Secret Service, but that was what made people so upset and angry around your comments, around Kathy Griffin's comments. And then we're looking at this, you know, crazy shooter that, thank God, was taken out yesterday. And a lot of people are speculating, Ted. They're just speculating around, is all of this rhetoric, all of this fiery, divisive, violent, undertoned rhetoric, at least partly responsible?
You know, I did my wife called it eloquence, so I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. I made a statement yesterday as sincere and passionate and pushed by goodwill and decency and my love for my fellow Americans, regardless of political persuasion. And I would encourage people to go to my Facebook and look at my rant. And I articulated conclusively and unambiguously what I'm conveying to you now, Ebony, and that is that not only have I never referenced or encouraged violence, but I condemn violence. I am 100% against any harm to any human beings, particularly my brothers here in America. So that doesn't mean we can't have increased and escalated shouting matches, but we've got to be respectful, shake hands, and then come back another day and hopefully win at the voting booth.
Well, let me say this, Ted Nugent. First, a mighty thanks to your wife, your consigliere, the person giving you counsel on this. Second, that you would choose our radio program, the New Curtis and Ebony K. Williams Show, to publicly say this after you went to your Facebook page and alerted all of your followers. And I know you're going to continue to do such. And maybe you can lead in this.
Yep.
And others will now follow.
I agree, Ted. I think you've positioned yourself quite uniquely to be the voice of transition on this issue. And again, it's not at all a backing down. Like you said, you're doubling down politically, but you're showing class, you're showing growth and maturity, and that's a lesson I think this country desperately needs right now.
Well, I won't convey that in my music. It's still raw. Okay. My music is still as raw.
Well, you're still from the dirty D, Ted. You're still from the dirty D. I got you.
But Ebony and Curtis, thank you. I think this is an important message, and I think this program is an important format to convey that message. Here's the battle cry for America. Zero violence.
Zero violence.
Thank
Ted
you.
Nugent. Thank you,
Ted
so Nugent. Much, Ted.
Thanks. God bless you guys. God bless America.
As you heard it, ladies and gentlemen, Ted Nugent chose this station out of every other radio station in America and any other forum other than his own Facebook page to make that new pronouncement after he had an epiphany after the shooting that took place in Washington, D.C. on that congressional softball field yesterday. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Imus in the Morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
It's really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
Wow, that was history making, because we were going to have a discussion about heated rhetoric on both sides of the aisle, how to resolve the differences, and Ted Nugent, who has been one of the people pointed to as a catalyst for this anger, this rage, the suggestion that violence be used, in this case, against the former president of the United States, Barack Obama, and for him to acknowledge on our show and choose our show first, Ebony, as the place to say, I was wrong, I had an epiphany, my wife convinced me, I've got to change my rhetoric, I am going to lead now, and hopefully others will follow. That's
Curtis,
amazing,
I'm shocked.
Amazing.
I'm sitting here with my mouth open, I cannot believe it, I am so shocked, in the best possible way, because you know what? When you know better, you do better. And for whatever reason, seems like Ted Nugent knows better. He's doing better. This is a fantastic, historic day.
Well, we got to revisit this up next.
Oh, 100%.
Don't go anywhere.
Bring the noise!
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
Attorney, radio talk show host.
Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now, putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the
law and a law one.
The new Midday Show, 77 WABC.
Can't scratch paper.
Six minutes after one, we're high atop Madison Square Garden on a perfect day, New York weather-wise, and really what has turned out to be just a really wonderful, wonderful day. We're here in the comfortable studios provided to us by NJDiet.com. And Curtis, we just were able to experience what I have to tell you was one of those moments that makes me totally remember and relish in the great privilege it is to do what we do here, which is to affect discourse and dialogue, engage in things that sometimes get hot and contested and raw. But what we just had was Ted Nugent calling into our radio program, giving his first interview post this shooting that happened tragically in D.C. yesterday, injuring five, including the whip of the congressional whip, Steve Scalise. Ted Nugent calling in to share his remarks around his take on the rhetoric. And we'd already planned this. That's what's so amazing is we'd already planned a show to go into this hour talking specifically about the responsibility of political rhetoric around yesterday's shooting, and in general, the toxicity that's going on in today's climate. And it wasn't just me that's been asking these questions. The great Charlie Rose started.
Clearly, we saw that during a campaign, which people talk about things like, you know, lock her up. And we saw some of the most crude political language that we'd heard. We did see expressions that we had not heard before. This has been a season of sort of coarse political rhetoric.
Coarse political dialogue, it's one way to put it.
Right, but you see, you're never going to get from Charlie Rose or individuals who perceive of as being leaning left an apologetic tone on their part. You're not going to get it from a lot of people on the right. And let's face it, who would have ever thought that Ted Nugent would take a step backwards? A guy who has never apologized for anything, and he said a lot of things that, quite frankly, even has offended some of his hardcore supporters. Even some who are strong Second Amendment rights advocates, members of the NRA, who feel that he's crossed the line. And for him to choose this forum, and he chose it for two reasons. A, he knows you personally because of his appearances on the Fox News channel.
He knows you, too.
He knows me from the streets of Detroit. We've never done interviews on the radio or television or shared a microphone or a lens. But he remembers me going into Detroit. And remember, I'm a person who has an organization in which we don't carry weapons. So you would think right away there would be some conflict there. But because he has respect for the streets, where he's earned his own cred, and obviously...
Well, you got all the street cred, Curtis.
Right. He's a well-known figure on TV, especially the Fox News Channel. He knew he could come on this forum. He could humble himself because others would have given him a beatdown, an unmerciful beatdown, and some of our listeners might feel that he deserved it. But he had an open forum to describe this epiphany that he had, how he wants to lead in the change of the heated rhetoric that many people are now claiming has led to an increase in violence. And this was the place that he chose to be, the new Curtis and Ebony show here on 77 AM WABC. We're opposite Rush Limbaugh. He could have called up Rush Limbaugh.
Could have easily called up Rush.
Talking to hundreds of stations across the nation, he chose not, or his many other friends in media. I wouldn't say he's my friend. I don't think he's...
He's not my friend. But like you said, Curtis, he's been on the Fox News channel. He called into Fox News about 2 weeks ago when the Kathy Griffin thing first happened. And Eric Bolling and him have a rapport. And then they went back and forth. And I guess I took it as an opportunity, Curtis, to cross-examine him, is the way it was categorized on social media. Not in a mean-spirited way, because that's just not my personality. Sure. But I have to have answers. And so I had to take that opportunity, Curtis, when Ted called into the Fox News specialist to ask him, now, wait a minute, Ted, because he was calling in to condemn Kathy Griffith, for her beheaded ISIS-style picture of Trump. I said, now, Ted, I don't like what Kathy did either, but we got to talk about what you've said about President Barack Obama, what you've said about Hillary Clinton and the two of them being hung and for treason. So we got to talk about this language and where's your responsibility. And in that moment, Curtis, I got to tell you, he doubled down. Mm. He doubled down on it and said, you know what? I didn't feel. And we're going to have that audio in a minute.
So that was just two weeks ago.
And something happened within the past 2 weeks.
Well, I
between
think he
his wife, the power, first of all.
The power of his wife.
Yeah.
In the aftermath of the shooting on the softball field. Congressman Scalise, obviously the others who were also injured, caused him to reflect, first go on his Facebook page, talk to his many avid listeners, which I completely understand because they're the hardcore fans, because this is a complete flip of the script.
Totally.
He has never backed off. He has never apologized. He has never said, I had second thoughts. And then to choose our forum as the first because he felt he would get a fair hearing.
That's important.
Without somebody sort of jumping him from either side. Like, oh, you're getting soft, you're getting weak, I can't believe this. Or the other side is like, you deserve to get beat down now, Ted Nugent.
Absolutely. And, you know, I get that question all the time, Curtis. You know, why am I on Fox News? Why, you know, because of these opportunities. And I want to make that very clear. I think that's very important. Because we will never have this type of transition on behalf of any among us, Curtis, if we are afraid to go into spaces that are less than comfortable. You know, I call it the echo chamber. If that's all we do is talk amongst ourselves to people that think like us and say what we want to hear, we're never going to have these type of breakthrough moments that we heard right here on the Curtis and Ebony Show.
But at the tender age of 69, my wife has convinced me that I just can't use those harsh terms. I cannot, and I will not, and I encourage even my friends slash enemy on the left in the Democrat and liberal world that we have got to be civil to each other, that the whole world is watching America, where you have the God-given right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and we have got to be more respectful to the other side. But I have to clarify, we really are angry. We don't believe, we cannot believe that people on the left don't want secure borders, that this is crazy to us. But I am here to tell you, Ebony, your civil discourse from one side to the left and the right, I think, is a shining example. We have just got to take a deep breath. Remember, I am the Motor City Madman.
You are.
I didn't just write Wango Tango. I meant it. I mean, but I'm going to take a deep breath, and I am going to back it down. And if it gets fiery, if it gets hateful, I'm going away. I'm not going to engage in that kind of hateful rhetoric anymore.
Wow. Honestly, Curtis, he said he's going to take a deep breath. If everybody in this country, and I'm not saying Ted's perfect because goodness, he's far from it, so am I. But to take that moment to think about the consequences of what they're saying, not just the intentionality, because he was very clear. He never really meant for Obama to eat the gun. He never really meant for Hillary to hang.
Yeah, but what was it? When he said to President Obama, suck on my machine gun, that is a street term. Whether it's a regular handgun, a rifle, assault weapon, a machine gun, that's used commonly in the streets. It's used to me all the time. Yo, come over here and suck on my Thule. That means they want to blast your brains out. That's real. And Ted knows that. Ted knows that. He's a street guy. It's not like, okay, he lives in rural areas and suburban areas now. But he made his mark in the mean, tough streets of Detroit, where being a white guy meant that you were in the minority, not the majority. And he knows what that terminology means. So for him to do a pirouette, for him to suddenly rethink that statement and position, and some of the other statements that he's made that have been racially charged.
For sure.
To suddenly have that epiphany with the urging of his wife being his consigliere, the balance, the yin and the yang, and then to use our forum to publicly acknowledge he's got to move in a different direction, says a lot, and hopefully others who have had such extremist positions on both sides of the aisle will take note of that and follow in his footsteps.
Absolutely, Curtis, and I can already tell you, I hope this doesn't happen, but I can predict that many will have a cynical attitude about this moment and will look at it and think, you know, we don't need to celebrate Ted for doing what he should have done the whole time. But I would push back against that knee jerk, because this is not about saying Ted's the next Dr. Martin Luther King, anything crazy and extreme like that. But it is to talk about this moment of how inspiring this is. This is not about glorifying Ted.
We actually have the cut of him 2 weeks ago where you acknowledged on the program that you're a co-hostess of, the specialists at 5 o'clock to 6 on the Fox News channel, where he actually doubled down.
My statements were in response to an outrageous attempt to ban certain types of firearms that would do nothing except help bad guys with more gun-free zones. I was on stage at a rock and roll concert when Obama was a senator, not the president, and I made an outrageous metaphor telling him that we will not accept his gun control laws, but I never threatened anyone.
We're going to have more of that when we come back, because then I pushed back, Curtis. You know me. I'm a nice gal from the South, but you can't be withholding facts. And I felt like in that moment, Ted was withholding facts and giving me a lot of spin. And so we had to get through the spin. But even just listen to the tone of his voice, Curtis. You heard the tone of his voice when he called into the Fox News specialist, a little defensive. Maybe he was feeling like I was putting him on the ropes. But the tone today, after the conversation with his lovely wife and reflecting himself internally, I'm sure, totally different sound.
Well, let's open up our phone lines to all of our listeners. History is made here today on the Curtis and Ebony Show, and I don't use that term loosely. I've been doing this for 26 years. And this is part of the national discussion. The day after the shooting on that softball field of Republicans and those who were with them, as this gunman came all the way from Belleville, Illinois, with that in mind, to shoot Republicans because he was angry at Trump. And yet here, Ted Nugent, one of those who has been pointed at for the heated rhetoric used during the campaign and post the inauguration, is the first that I know of to say, I am rethinking this. I have had an epiphany. I am backing down. If necessary, I will disappear from public discourse on this issue. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC, and you heard it first here on the new Curtis and Ebony Show on WABC that you can hear every Monday through Friday from 12 to 3. I've had a lot of partners in the past. Nobody would have, Ted Nugent would not have called up if any of them were here, or if I was just here on my own.
I was shocked he called, not because, I was any kind of nasty to him, but like you said, to humble yourself for this moment. He knew my position on his previous thoughts, and it was so great that he felt like this was a safe space for him, because we could have an intellectually honest and very, very important Curtis dialogue.
Well, also,
this is amazing.
Because he was accused of using racist, heated rhetoric against the black president.
Absolutely.
You would have thought he's not going to be talking to Ebony K. Williams, but you provided a comfort zone for him from broadcasting. I provided a comfort zone from my experiences with him in the streets of Detroit. And that's what led to the right chemistry. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Turn it up.
The stories, the moments, the new midday show.
I thought the law had a law one.
77 WABC and the WABC radio app.
I'm not trying to make excuses, but when I made those wild-ass comments on stage against the then-Senator Hillary Clinton and then-Senator Barack Obama, I don't know if you can grasp the degree of adrenaline and intensity and sheer over-the-top animal spirit and attitude that I live on stage. But I've got to take that deep breath, because the energy and the focus and priority that I put into creating great rhythm and blues, great music, rock and roll with this greatest band in the world, I have to be in tune and in time with my bass player and drummer. Now I've got to get my psyche in tune that I can still hold the ground and I can be feisty. I can be fiery. I can be passionate.
Nobody's going to take that away.
I will avoid anything that can be interpreted as condoning or referencing violence. I have never referenced violence. I've said some smart-ass stuff in the past. And
well, come on, Ted.
I talked about it.
Yeah.
And, boy, that was precedent setting at a time in which people are looking for the first cracks in the two sides that have hardened against one another. I mean, you couldn't find a person more identifiable with being an extremist on one side, definitely on the right side, than Ted Nugent. There's so many also on the left side. I don't see any of them who made that crack in the wall yet. And yet, to his credit, he chose our program in order to make that announcement. Let's go right to the phones. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. It's Joe, first up in the queue from Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Giuseppe.
Hey, how you guys doing? Curtis, first, condolences on your mom. Ebony, welcome aboard. I love the show. Guys, I wanted to congratulate you both for providing such a forum where Ted Nugent knew he'd be challenged, but also treated with respect. I think it's indicative of how you guys run the program.
Thank you for that, Joe. I think that's important as well. And not, you know, to pat ourselves on the back necessarily, Curtis, but to hopefully lead by a little bit of example here. Because if this can be, and you know, you're right, he's the first person to do it so far, but maybe this is a trickle effect. Maybe now there will be some on the left that will start to come forward and say, you know what, let me take a page from Ted Nugent and dial it back.
Well, you know what, when I told people I voted for Trump, one idiot aligned me with the Klan, told me I was aligned with the Klan. And I didn't know how to take that. The breakups in families, breakups in marriages over this crap. It's an election. Guess what? Neither side really cares about us. They don't seem to understand that. I have an equal distrust of both sides, but I get the sneaking suspicion you both do as well.
Well, that's healthy. Healthy of you, Joe, because politicians have lied to us in the past, will continue to lie to us in the future. Our favorites, those that we're not in favor of. It's the very reason that motivated me, Ebony, and our audience to become the chairman of the New York State Reform Party. Can find out more about who we are and why we have created this new party line at nyreformparty.com, nyreformparty.com, because we're trying to represent people, the mass majority of people, who really are not apparatchiks of either side, don't like the rhetoric, don't like the
lack of results,
bipartisanship that dominates every discussion.
Yeah.
Going back to Barack Obama's not a citizen, you know, he's from Kenya and Indonesia, and that nonsense.
Yeah.
And then obviously the nonsense of the left in describing Donald Trump as a fascist, a racist,
Nazi,
a sexist, a homophobic, you name it.
Hitler, yeah. I mean, it's so crazy. And you know what? The worst part, Curtis, is it gets in the way of governing. See, that's why we can't have any decent policies that make any sense, because of that crap that serves their base. See, it's all a money scheme.
Well, let me do two things that I haven't heard done by a lot of people who are still sort of trying to recover from the trauma of the shootings yesterday. Flag Day, right? Have we heard about an acknowledgement of our flag that unites us?
No. No one's talking about it.
And by the way, he is our president. Happy birthday, Mr. President Donald Trump. Whether you like him or you don't like him, that would be a respectful thing to do. Anyway, let's go to Lou's calling from Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Lou?
Hi, Curtis, and welcome, Ebony. I don't know you too well, but welcome to the show. So far, what I've heard, I think you're a very rational person, so it's nice to hear a breath of fresh air. I want to say something. You know, whether I've been talking to Rick from the days of Bob Grant, and Curtis knows me a long time, and, you know, what do we consider hate speech? You know, when you're talking about something on a topic, if it goes to the personal attack, if it goes to vicious slander, if it goes to insult, if it goes to sensationalism and stereotyping, you know what? That's the time to end the argument and walk away and say you're dealing with a moron. And you don't deal with morons. You just walk away. My dad said, you know, some people, you know, they're a brick wall. And this has been going on too much, and especially in the media, where sensationalism has replaced reportage. Our entertainment has gotten a little too vicious with these attacks. Instead of keeping to their rational argument.
Well, you know why, Lou? That's what I'm saying. It's a business model. See, the obsession is with ratings. The obsession is with ratings. And if they feel that they will have better ratings, whoever the network, whoever the team, if they feel their ratings will improve, they will say and do anything. But then when something tragic like happened yesterday, nobody wants blood on their hands. Oh, nobody wants blood on their hands.
Or why not this line of logic that I've taken? I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I didn't vote for Hillary Rodham Clinton. I voted for myself because I didn't like the other choice.
You wrote yourself in?
Yeah, wrote myself in. But I
probably would have legitimately voted for you over. I wrote in Kamala Harris, and I would have probably wrote you in.
Oh, Miss Interruption?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's new. She's got to make her.
She's got to make money, right? She got to raise money.
You got to raise money. Yeah,
that's why she did
right.
that.
Of course it is.
Which is so hypocritical.
It's
but
horrible.
Anyway, that's for a different time. But the point is, I've described Donald Trump nationally as a screwball, a crackpot, manic depressive, the George Steinbrenner of modern American politics. But when he's right, he's right. And I'll give him his props when he's right. And when he's wrong, that's when you attack him. But there are some folks constantly attacking him.
Because it's not about the politics, Curtis.
And others,
Curtis,
who will never say he's wrong.
Because it's not about politics for those people, Curtis. It is about a seething and a loathing of him as a person, and the same for Obama.
Let's go to Rich in Brooklyn. Don't tell me this, Rich. You're not going to accept Ted Nugent's apology.
Coming. Go ahead, Rich.
Well, okay. Well, the reason why is because let me ask you a question. How come he didn't have that epiphany when Gabby Giffords got shot? Oh, and by the way, since we're on this subject, you don't accept de Blasio as your mayor, because you didn't vote for him. Well, I don't accept Trump as my president because I didn't vote for him
either. But that's different than what you just heard Ted Nugent say. He walked back his statements that before he would double down on. And you don't want to give him any credit for that in leading this discussion away from the heated rhetoric?
Well, let me ask you something.
Rich, to listen. Just listen to what he said.
But at the tender age of 69, my wife has convinced me that I just can't use those harsh terms. I cannot, and I will not, and I encourage even my friends slash enemy on the left in the Democrat and liberal world that we have got to be civil to each other.
Rich, you tell me you can't accept that as an apology?
Because where was he when Gabby Giffords?
Oh, Maranama.
Where was he when those
kids?
I told you this was going to happen, Curtis.
Like you who won't give an inch, who won't even say this is
giving
good.
An inch. It's about not being scammed.
Well, here's the thing, Rich. Let me say
how
this,
is he,
Rich.
How is he scamming
because
you?
He's suspicious.
Are you going to be going to Wisconsin, Rich? The answer is no.
No, he's suspicious of the timing. He's saying, why did it take Scalise getting shot for him to make a move? I would say this to you, though, Rich. I hear you, but I would say this. When you know better, you do. And if it takes a Republican attack for a Republican-minded person to finally get it, then so be it.
What's the point, then, of stepping back? What's the point of saying, hey, we need to move in a different direction if everything you're going to look at is, well, this is what you said 2 years ago or 4 years ago or six years ago.
Or 2 weeks ago in this case.
He just said he's had an epiphany. He's moving in a different direction. And, in fact, if he doesn't have an impact, he is going to retire from the public scene. Did you ever think he would ever? Ted Nugent, who never apologized for anything in his life, has just apologized in the midst of this national discussion.
I did not think that's what he was calling us for, Curtis. When our producer got in our ear and told us, unprompted, by the way, we did not ask Ted to call this show. We had no idea.
I thought he was going to triple down.
I thought he was going to triple down like he called Fox News last week and double down. But we're going to continue it. I personally am willing to move forward. If Ted is, I am. Call us. 1-800-848-WABC. 1-800-848-9222. And I mean that. I'm not being naive around it. I'm not saying he's a changed person. But I am saying one step forward is worth a lot these days when people are getting shot, sometimes killed, in the name of political discourse. More on it when we come back. But up next, headlines from Deborah Valentine.
You for your midday.
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony. Exclusively.
Bring the noise!
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
You have to realize I was born in Detroit in 1948, and I was there in the heat and the fire of the 67 riots, and I was on the side of my black brothers, the Funk Brothers, the Motown Heroes, and so I have been in the eye of the storm. And as Curtis clarified, and it's important we never forget this, when those kind of savage remarks are made, especially on a rock and roll stage, they're not meant literally. I don't want anybody's lips on my machine gun. Those weren't machine guns, by the way.
Oh.
They were airsoft guns, but they sure look cool. what I want to convey, and Ebony, you're right, I'm not only not backing off my constitutional fight, because my politics are constitutional. My politics are Bill of Rights.
Yep,
my politics are Declaration of Independence and Emancipation Proclamation. I am so simple.
I certainly like the Emancipation Proclamation. Yeah, I'm a big fan of it. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm actually increasing my activism because I see the division in this country. But again, I'd love to discuss in detail at a future date why we are angry and how confused we are. Now, we can be confused, but we are not allowed to
incite. Yes. And that's the test. And that's literally the constitutional test around what speech is protected, what's an expression of art, and what's just absolutely unconstitutional. And that I'm so happy, Curtis, that we were able to get to a clear point of threshold.
That was an excerpt of the exclusive interview we had with Ted Nugent. Out of his many friends in media, he chose this program, the new Curtis and Ebony Show, to indicate to the world that he's had an epiphany as a result of the violence on the softball field where the Republican congressional delegation was practicing for tonight's game. That was a major movement by one person who has been considered a bomb thrower, somebody who throws gasoline on the fire on the right. It'd be great to see if that leads to others, both on the right and left, who somehow have that same epiphany and calm it down. And he referred to the riots that he survived in Detroit that led to the election of the first black mayor of Detroit, Coleman Young. And a lot of people don't realize that he had been a labor organizer, was considered a Democrat, a liberal progressive. But he advocated to blacks who were in the inner city, arm yourself, because the whites who fled to the suburbs are going to come back and try to take the inner city. And people said, you're nuts. Why would any white people who fled Detroit want to move back to Detroit? As a result, a lot of black people got weapons, and some of those weapons were used against other black people eventually in black-on-black crime. And to the day he died, Mayor Coleman Young never apologized for fueling that purchase of weapons, both illegally and legally, that flooded the streets of Detroit and led to that increase in black-on-black crime. Let's go to the phones if we can. First up in the queue is Bill calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Bill?
Yes, I think Trump introduced violence into politics. I'll give you a couple of examples. First, his statement that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not be prosecuted. He really meant a Hillary supporter. Second, at Trump's rallies, he encouraged his followers to attack Hillary protesters who showed up at the event. He then suggested he would pay their legal bills. Third, his security, personal security team, they severely beat up protesters in front of Trump's towers. With Trump's approval. This is before he was elected. And then fourth, the Republican congressman out west, he viciously attacked and beat this reporter. He could have broke his neck and killed him. So I think the evidence is that Trump has introduced a vile form of political violence into...
Bill, don't you at least give Ted Nugent credit, because he was on that stage in Pennsylvania after the drop of the Billy Bush tapes when nobody would appear with the candidate at the time, Donald Trump, stood by him, continued with his heated rhetoric, has now been the first to break ranks. I think this is someone that Trump would look at, because he just recently invited into the White House.
Yeah, they are very close. And I wonder if by Ted Nugent calling our program today and making this proclamation of just absolutely stepping back from this type of violent discourse, perhaps it will, by proxy, our friends influence us. By proxy, maybe Trump get to wake up call of his own. Now, I want to make this important point, Curtis. We were saying before, Ted called us. We didn't call him. We were going to talk about this, and I was going to cite him as an example. We talked about it in our pre-show meeting. And quite frankly, I'm a woman of faith. Look at God. Get this text from our lovely producer here, Mr. Justin Love. His publicist said that Ted specifically asked to talk to me about it because he wanted maybe to clarify or walk back the heated discussion that we'd had on Fox News not 2 weeks ago.
Sure. He had a comfort zone with you because he recognized, although you were adversarial, you were respectful. Yeah. And at least his opinion would be heard. You wouldn't all of a sudden be dancing the whore and the tarantella. Yeah, see, I told you so, Ted.
Because that doesn't get us anywhere, Curtis. I mean, not if you're sincere about wanting our country to heal from this craziness, because I think that's what happened yesterday, Curtis. I think that politics are making us crazy.
Well, I disagree, because
I do.
I'm older than you. I'm double your age. And I remember 68. I remember those times. It was a hell of a lot more crazier than
absolutely,
it is today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But how bad is it, Curtis, that we haven't progressed in 30-some years?
I still, though, say it's individual responsibility and culpability when you decide through an act of violence to express yourself against those that you think are enemies of your point of view or enemies of America.
100%. But at what point, though, as a society, Curtis, do we say that's actually not normal? And when you start spewing stuff on your Facebook and your Twitter that looks like derangement, people step up and say something.
Mental health issues, it's what I've always said, but most don't want to address it. Let's go to Phil in Pennsylvania. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC, Phil.
Hi, Curtis and Ebony. My comment is, you know, I give Ted Nugent overall credit for the spirit of the comments, but, you know, I got to take issue with this whole, this wall idea, which is fundamentally stupid. I mean, think about it. At a time here where we're talking about the Russians having hacked into our election, fake news, all of that, the real threat is cyber terrorism. And, you know, I don't know why Fox News and the right continue to think that a wall is going to be the answer.
I can tell you why. I can tell you why, Phil. Yeah. I can tell you why. And okay. I don't like the wall either. I think it's too expensive and it's ridiculous. It doesn't keep us safer. But many of my colleagues at Fox News, since you called them out specifically, are very afraid of the economics of having what they consider to be a threat to their way of life, and they feel like that's coming directly over the border from Mexico. If you notice, nobody's advocating for a Canadian border wall, okay? It's just Mexico, because they're afraid that, quote, Mexicans are taking their jobs, pulling over illegal drugs, cocaine and what have you, heroin, and the...
Whoa, hold on.
That's what they believe.
El Chapo is not Canadian. El Chapo is Mexican.
I hear
you. The narco terrorists are in Mexico. They're not in Canada.
But do you think that they're not going to keep that revenue flowing with the wall? Come on, Curtis. That wall is not going to stop them from making those billions.
It will be inhibited greatly. Right now, it's a turnstile back and forth. We just look at MS-13. They go back and forth to Central America illegally, in and out, in and out.
How about border security? How about increased efforts around that? Because this wall, I'm going to tell you, all you got to do is pay the right amount, Curtis. You're going to get through that wall.
Let's go to Lon calling from Manhattan. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Lon?
Hey, thank you, Ebony and Curtis. You know, there's so many things to say. I guess you're right that Nugent should be given the benefit of the doubt for his recent comments, although his history makes it very difficult to believe that his epiphany is to be trusted. I, too, am from Motown, from Motor City, and I've seen the devastation that city's experienced. And it's just unbelievable. And you're pointing out about the wall. If there's a wall there, they're going to find a way to get over it.
Of course.
You know, it's ridiculous.
Well, now, you say it's ridiculous, but just the fact that Donald Trump is president already, with his rhetoric about how he's going to build a higher, and make the Mexicans pay for it, obviously a lot of that in doubt. There are less people coming across the border, and there are more deportations of those who have committed crimes while here in America illegally. So there are some residual benefits from that, Lon.
Well, there may be some temporary residual benefits, but I don't think you're getting to the core of the problem. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound.
I don't see other remedies that are being suggested as an alternative because, let's face it, Barack Obama had 8 years.
I just gave you one. I'm not Barack Obama, but I just gave you a remedy because I think you're right. We're seeing a decrease in the illegal immigration, and we're seeing the self-deportation because we're showing as a country that we're serious about having sovereignty and a border, and I'm totally for that.
I don't think we're showing it as a country. We're showing it through the Trump administration.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So I think that that's good, but I don't think the wall itself is good. So I don't have a problem with the tough-on-border language, but this border wall, come on, at the tune of how much money? Please.
800-848-WABC.
Bring the noise!
Studio View and WABCRadio.com.
In the spirit of trying to connect,
a great way to see an angel and a beauty.
There's no doubt.
Take a listen. Take a peek.
Turn it up!
Curtis and Ebony, 77 WABC.
We're live and local here at the brand new Curtis and Ebony Show on a history-making day, having a complete 180 from the rocker and legend and very, very controversial Ted Nugent. We're going straight to the calls. Mark from Staten Island, you're on live.
Hey, Ebony, congratulations. Curtis, a big step up with Kobe, let me tell you. I got to tell you something. I've been listening to everything with liberals and all of talk radio and on TV and everything. And it's amazing their selective memory. They're all championing Bernie Sanders. Look how he came out. Look how against this and everything else. Bernie Sanders had to see why. Because everybody forgets. I'm not talking about back in 2011. I'm talking back in March of this year. when Bernie Sanders was on a news program and said, our objective is to cause disrupt them so when they go back to
I think we actually have the cut of that, Mark. Let's go to exactly what Bernie Sanders said.
To cause them harm, Ebony. He actually said to cause them harm.
Well, I think he said to make them scared, right? That's what he said.
This over-the-top rhetoric has got to stop. Because people like this nut yesterday, they believe this stuff.
Well, Mark, hold on a second. Let's actually play what Bernie Sanders told Rachel Maddow.
You're seeing members of Congress, Republicans, having to sneak out the back door or claim, I'm worried about my safety. I can't even hold a town meeting. And that is our goal.
Now,
that's
you're no different than what the Tea Party said when Democrats were holding town hall meetings trying to promote the Obamacare initiative.
Oh, Curtis, we've got that audio as well.
I live for America. I work for America. And I love this country. And I can't stand socialism. I can't stand communism. The only good communist is a dead communist. Thank you, sir. The only good communist is a dead communist. Yeah! The only good communist is a dead communist!
All right, Mark, that was a good old Tea Party.
Well, that's also in the midst of when they were accusing then-President Barack Obama of being a communist.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how they felt about the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare.
But remember, these town hall meetings, and there's no reason that a congressman or congresswoman shouldn't be under rhetorical fire.
Operative word.
Well,
rhetorical.
And that's what everyone was referring to, both the Tea Party and Bernie Sanders. No one was suggesting violence should take place against the person of a congressman or congresswoman, but they should have been subjected to rhetorical fire. They shouldn't be able to run or hide. They should be able to explain themselves.
Bring the noise!
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and lead
attorney, radio talk show host,
Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show, 77 WABC.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you.
7 minutes after the hour of two. You weren't born yet, Ebony K. Williams. I was. And that was Marilyn Monroe, who was singing to then-President John F. Kennedy at the old Madison Square Garden on 50th and 8th. It was a huge gathering, about 18,000. I think it was just a Democratic event. She was singing to him. Later, we were to find out that he was snacking on her while trading her up with his brother, Robert F. Kennedy, who was the attorney general at the time. And today...
Taking bromance, by the way, to a new meaning.
Right. The reason we play that today is it is the birthday of Donald Trump. And I'm trying to think who might play that role, even though it's on his, five favorite song list of the president, Donald Trump. Lady Gaga is one of his favorites. I don't think she would sing it.
No.
We know Barbara Streisand, the schnoz, would not sing it. He'd be hard-pressed to find somebody of that same stature to sing him a happy birthday song.
He might be able to get, Carrie Underwood, maybe.
Or maybe Ted Nugent.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I don't know if he wants it from Ted Nugent, though. Not breathy like that.
But
like
as
Marilyn
we're
gave him.
High atop Madison Square Garden in these great facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com, I just want to give a shout out because yesterday was Flag Day.
Yes, it was.
We did not mention it, although I was aware of it, because I wanted to see what other media outlets would mention it at all. Would it be in print publication? Would it be over the radio? Would it be on television? I want to give a shout out to Newhouse Publications, which was a huge publishing firm. Started out in Staten Island. Their first newspaper was the Staten Island Advance, and the Newark Star Ledger, and a whole bunch of other papers around the country. And the front page of the Staten Island Advance had Flag Day above the fold, below the fold. Not only the history, the tradition, but how you honor the flag, how you get rid of an old flag the proper way, how you hang a flag. All the basic protocols of the American flag usage. And think of it, this is the one symbol that brings us all together, no matter how politically we are divided. And you would have thought every media outlet yesterday would have been singing happy birthday to our flag that Betsy Ross sewed in her home not far from where the Liberty Bell is in Philadelphia. And there was little, if any, mention of that.
Even you weren't born when Betsy Ross did that, Curtis. Not even you are that old. So
that's true. Although I've been to Betsy Ross's house, I've seen the Liberty Bell cracked. And clearly you would have thought that this great country of ours, everyone would have put aside their differences and would have spent just a moment acknowledging, hey, it's America's Flag Day.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not surprised, Curtis, because I think in this moment, so many people are in their feelings and are deeply holding on and rooted in this notion of division. It's almost as if it's a new embraced way to be. I don't think people are looking for these moments of camaraderie. Look at what just happened here on our program. Ted Nugent calling in and saying, you know what? I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to take a breath. And I'm going to do better.
But then...
And even that's hit with skepticism.
But then something happens in the news cycle, as always happens, after the president tweeted out a message for unity yesterday.
Oh, he got a birthday present. He got an early birthday present.
Right. He's met by a Washington Post story that it was sourced from the offices of the new special prosecutor Mullen, saying that he is under investigation for obstruction of justice?
That's right. That's new information, Curtis, because we know three times in his firing of Comey, the president was very clear that he was never under investigation by the now fired Comey. But yeah, apparently, happy early birthday, President Trump. They are saying, the sources are telling them it's being leaked, that he is now a point of examination under this investigation, specifically around the obstruction of justice
issue. All
right,
but think of that. Mueller was almost elevated to sainthood by members on both sides of the aisle.
Yes, he was.
He was going to put together a staff, although nobody said it, the suggestion was it would be somewhat leak-proof. Right out of the box, the sieve opens up and starts leaking information. And in this case, where normally I would be at odds with the president over him twittering away and getting into a Twitter rampage, I think I understand why he would be outraged this morning, why he would revert to Twitter, because here it is, St. Mueller. His staff is leaking information that says that the president of the United States is under investigation by his special prosecutorial force for obstruction of justice. And I'm saying, whoa, hold on a second. You're going to have maybe 3 years of a ride, Mueller. Your assistants, and we've read many stories of how, hey, this is the top echelon of all lawyers, the guys who investigated Enron, some holdovers from the era of Watergate, the best, number one, top shelf, five-star prosecutors in their own right, defense attorneys coming together. And already they're leaking like there's no tomorrow. So,
oh, yeah. It's so intentional.
I, who normally am at odds with the president over his Twitter account and his Twitter rampages, I think I understand on the day of his birthday why he is righteously outraged that the special prosecutor's office, not even in full effect yet, is already leaking like a sieve. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And what were some of his tweets this morning that the president was shooting out?
He was on a Twitter rampage. But I want to go back for 1 second, Curtis, to also, they're looking at financial crimes from Donald Trump. And I mean, look, that's not a good look. It should not be leaked. I completely agree with you. But let's not, you know, misunderstand here. This is not looking good for President Trump. And maybe he was in a better position with Comey, just keeping it under hush-hush, because now it's almost like they're taunting him, Curtis. I feel like this is the special prosecutor at this point taunting Trump and saying, you know what? I dare you to fire me. Because remember, that was all the talk, is whether or not Mueller was going to get fired by President Trump. And he can do it. But I mean, how does he do it now?
Well, it's interesting.
You're fired.
That's right. Here's the president's tweets, his Twitter rampage. And again, I typically think that somebody in his office, in his staff, or maybe his wife or his daughter should put finger cuffs, Chinese finger cuffs on him at night when he goes to sleep and keep them on in the morning until his day gets underway. They made up a phony collusion with the Russian story, found zero proof, so now they go for obstruction of justice on the phony story. Nice.
Yeah, well.
He's got a right to be upset. You are witnessing the single greatest witch hunt in American political history, led by some very bad and conflicted people.
I don't know about that. I would argue, and I'm no Bill Clinton fan, but we have seen this before, where it is so apparent. And this is where I think a lot of Americans start just distrusting everything about our process. It's very apparent that somebody's got it out for Trump, for sure, just like somebody had it out for old Billy Boy Clinton. And this is going to waste a lot of taxpayer money. This is going to go on to your prediction of 2-3 years. And we probably won't have any real answers when it's all said and done. That's the sad part.
Let's go to the phones. First up in the queue is John out in Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Johnny?
Hey, Curtis, Ebony. Listen, I see what the FBI is trying to do now with Mueller, but can someone explain to me before he goes trying to prosecute the president in regards to the obstruction of justice when it was only supposed to be about Russia, how about we go back and find out what Holder and Mueller did with Salinger with $500 million, $500 million of taxpayers' money? Who didn't go to jail, and why wasn't that done?
Well, I think, John, you know, a lot of people are looking at some of the Obama administration officials, particularly Miss Loretta Lynch, you know. And so I think when you crack it open, you get what you get. I don't think anybody's going to be protected in this process. And maybe it does go back all the way to good old Eric Holder. Who knows?
Because I hate to say it, Mr. Holder was set up on contempt charges for not giving out information to Congress.
He was, and ultimately he wasn't held in contempt. They brought those, and those were dismissed. But, I mean, look, I'm not in the business of protecting anybody, John. So whether it's Trump,
right,
whether it's Eric Holder, whether it's Loretta Lynch, whether it's I think they all need to be looked at. So let's go now to George from New Jersey. George, you're on Live and Local with Curtis and Ebony.
Hi, guys. I think when you were talking about Mueller and the leak, I think the most important thing that happened over the last 2 days is that the talk began to increase about firing Mueller because of his relationship with Comey. Yesterday's leak made it impossible for Trump to fire Mueller.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. I think that was exactly why. I think all the leaks are strategic. As much as they're annoying, they shouldn't be done. If it at all possesses national security interests, then it literally has to be prosecuted. I mean, you just can't let that stuff go unchallenged. But Curtis, this is all about job security. This is absolutely done on the part of Mueller to make sure that if Trump fires him at this point, I mean, he looks like the most uncredible guy in D.C., and that's saying a lot.
You know, it would be good faith on the part of St. Mueller that everyone has beatified. I anticipate that Pope Francis will soon go through the beatification process.
Saint, yes.
Is to say, this is despicable. I'm aware that the Washington Post is claiming that a source in my new office has leaked that the president is under investigation for obstruction of justice. He needs to address that.
But what if it's true? What if it's true?
Then he needs to address it.
Okay.
He needs to address it. And secondarily, if it's not true, he needs to cold bust the person, either way, if it's true or not true, and find who is the source of the leak. Now, does it mean that he's going to end up pointing a finger at himself?
He might be the leak. Yeah, he very well might be the leak.
Well, then somebody needs to vet out the process of his assistants and figure that out. They found a crazy woman, right, who was working for the NSA, who was leaking information, and she's looking at 10 years. And she
Miss
is crazy when you hear her personal viewpoints towards the Trump administration and burning down the White House.
Saving the world.
Nuts.
Yeah, one leak at a time.
But
it,
we know
that
most leakers are not nuts. As you said, they have an agenda. In this case, Was it to maintain job security for Mueller and all of the lawyers that he is hiring at great expense, taxpayers' expense, who will spend 2-3 years in this process before they issue a final report?
Easily. Easily. And again, the final report, I'm predicting it right now, will not be very conclusive. I don't think for one second, Curtis, we're going to have any clear-cut answers as to the dealings of Mr. Trump, his business associates, or the like.
Absolutely. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. And was it tactically placed in the Washington Post knowing that it was Donald Trump's birthday?
Oh yeah. Happy birthday, Mr. President.
You. Really, that's what it is. Happy birthday,
Donald
Trump.
We've so enjoyed our back and forth, says the Washington Post.
You. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. You've already gotten the flavor today of how different a show this is because of Ebony K. Williams' presence here. Ted Nugent, having dealt with her before in an adversarial situation at the Fox News Channel on the program that she's featured on, The Specialist, every Monday through Friday from 5 to 6, chose this vehicle to get his message out to the world that he had had an epiphany as a result of yesterday's shooting on that softball field practice of Republicans. And he was going to tone down the rhetoric, and he was going to go out and amend the heated rhetoric, especially the talk about, hey, Barack Obama,
you can suck on
my machine gun.
Oh, so terrible.
And he did it exclusively here on the Curtis and Ebony Show. Would not have done it if I was here by myself or with another partner, but specifically because you were here.
It's very kind.
There's no doubt about it. That's what his publicist said.
Yeah.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
It's really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
And we're back to the brand new Curtis and Ebony show, sitting here now Monday through Friday, 12 noon to 3 p.m. And we're going straight to the phones. Jim from Rockaways.
Yes, hello, Jim.
Jim?
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. Curtis and Ebony, good afternoon. I'm listening to what you're saying. I do agree with Curtis about, you know, are the leaks really coming from Mueller's office or not? I think a pretty simple answer to this situation is, have the mainstream media come in, have Mueller, have Trump there, ask if the leaks are coming from his office. If he says yes, it is, just say the next leak, you're gone.
Well, I think that sounds good, and I've been a big proponent, Jim, of Trump getting rid of all the leakers because I'm tired of the excuse that everybody's an Obama holdover. The problem is now, if Trump gets rid of Mueller, everybody that already's got a thing out for Trump is going to say, he was getting too close to the good stuff. He was getting too close to proving a case of obstruction of justice and eventually leading to impeachment, and that's why he got fired. And there's no other way, Jim, they're going to see it.
Ebony, in private life, they have confidentiality clauses. Trump has pressed those on people that he's done business with, and in terms of the divorces he's had.
Sure.
Oprah has done that to people that she's done business with.
Everybody with a lot of money and stuff has that. Yeah.
So why is there nothing similar in government when you go to work for government, particularly when you're dealing with sensitive information, where you're signing a confidentiality clause that clearly specifies what you will not be able to do and what the consequences will be to you personally, not just in terms of getting locked up, but also in terms of major fines where they could bankrupt you?
Yeah, look, they're not supposed to be doing this, Curtis. Absolutely not. Because I suspect, you know, if we take this at the word, these sources are lawyers. And the minute you sign up and you work on this kind of case, there is an ethical presumption of confidentiality to your points. They don't really need the document.
What was
That's already there.
You said lawyers and ethical responsibility. That is an oxymoron.
Yep. Oh, Curtis,
what
I knew you would start
responsibility
hating
do
at
lawyers
some point
have
on today's beautiful broadcast.
They always hide behind the fact that they're lawyers and oh
my gosh.
You know,
that's so
lawyers can operate differently than
true
anyone else.
Curtis, let me tell you something.
They
even
can
in
extort,
my personal
they
life,
can shake down.
I am the person you want to give all your secrets to. You know why?
Hell no. You're TMZ.
Oh yeah. Give me all your secrets, Curtis.
Ebony K. Kardashian Williams, Miss TMZ. I will tell you jackedly squat anything about my private life.
I'm the best secret keeper because you give me $1, And see, now I can't talk because, you know, now it's attorney-client privilege all day. All your problems with Nancy, all your fights, tell them right to me.
Well, let me tell you something. You would never be my liar for hire.
Oh,
you would never be my liar for hire.
Everybody hates lawyers until they need one. Until they need one, Curtis.
I'd rather represent myself pro se.
Oh, God, of course. Shocker. And I'm the cheap one.
Oofa to the
ridiculous,
lawyers.
Ridiculous. Well, when we come back, speaking of lawyers, we're all waiting with bated breath across the country now for what possibly could be a verdict in the Cosby case. Jurors seem to be struggling to get there, but certainly, hopefully, they get to something.
They're deadlocked.
And
how
could
they be deadlocked?
He never
put on a defense.
I can tell you exactly why. And that's why they didn't put on a defense. And we've got an attorney joining us to break down the jury's questions. But first, we've got new headlines from Deborah Valentine.
Turn it up!
The stories, the moments, the new midday show.
I fought the law and the law won.
77 WABC and the WABC radio app.
Hey, it's Fred Albert, and I'm going to sing a song for you.
Those were back in the Bill Cosby glory days, Curtis, back before he was on trial for facing up to 10 years in prison.
I was never a Cosby kid. Never a Cosby kid watching that cartoon. Although obviously a whole nation grew up watching it.
I was a Cosby kid, and I'm not gonna. And I never really thought he was funny. But you got to remember, Curtis. For some of us, this was our shining example of black excellence. I mean, this guy, you know, before him, it was just Good Times and 227. That's fine. But with the Cosby Show, was this emergence of a black doctor, his black, beautiful attorney wife, and this type of black excellence that America had never really seen before.
Well, explain to me why, as he was emerging from the courthouse, and now apparently the jury is in deadlock in deliberating his fate, that he would actually revert to the tagline from his cartoon days doing the Cosby Kids Show.
Curtis, his lawyer had to be horrified because this is the scene. He's coming out of the courthouse. This is day three of deliberations. Obviously, there's at least a question to his guilt. And this guy who's been mum the whole time and just a minute ago was acting like he was blind, deaf, and dumb, could barely get to court. That's your response? I got to tell you, Curtis, it's a bad look, and it really makes it look like he's not taking this thing seriously at all.
So he was channeling Fat Albert? Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah, like, do you think that's cute? You think that's funny? Like, even if he's innocent, it's not funny that this woman apparently thinks that, you know, there was some real sexual wrongdoing here. But to help us break it down, Curtis, we're going to be joined by a Manhattan attorney. He's also a former prosecutor and has represented many, many high-profile people and actually cases just like this. Matthew Galuzzo, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on. How are you?
Great, Matthew. So, listen, we know that they're deadlocked, as Curtis has told us, and you know, at this point, they want to go home, right? They've been in trial for 8 days. Apparently, it's not an easy decision for them to make. They're ready to go home. Judge says, not so fast, get back to it, keep deliberating. But they have asked several questions. So I kind of want to have you help us walk through what these questions mean. One thing that we know they want is to see Cosby's testimony, going back to the deposition that they were pulling from here, where he calls the pills he gave Andrea Constant his friends, and they want more context as to around that. Why do you think they're interested in that?
Well, that's a good question. I think the jury's probably interested in figuring out what he said about the pills because they're trying to figure out whether or not she was surprised by what happened when she took them, I think. You know, if she expected it was just going to just take the edge off, as I think he was representing, it was actually going to knock her out and make her incapable of consenting to sexual assault.
Absolutely. Another big one here, Matthew, is they want to know, for it to be defined, what it means when they say, quote, without her knowledge. They seem very, very stuck on, understandably, Andrea's testimony. She was on the stand for a total of 7 hours, and she gave a lot of information, very gut-wrenching emotional testimony from her. And they want to know what she meant, what's meant by without her knowledge. So some kind of issue of consent are we getting at?
I think probably. Absolutely. I mean, that is the defense here, that this was a consensual sexual encounter. They haven't denied that this happened, just that she was consenting to it. And so I guess the question becomes, for the minds of the jury, perhaps, based on that note, you know, what did she expect was going to happen when she went over there? What was she expecting going to happen when she took the pill? And did she do this with the expectation that the next step was going to be sexual contact. I mean, I guess. I don't know what they're saying in there. Obviously, we don't know. The only people who know what they're saying to each other are those 12 people in that jury room right now. We're trying to read the tea leaves based on the notes they're sending out, but that's probably what they're getting at.
But it sounds to me, Matthew, like they're giving Bill Cosby the benefit of the doubt here, just based on everything that we've seen in the transcripts that have come out of the court testimony. And Cosby, although his attorney said, oh, yeah, he might testify. Yeah, I've heard that a million times. He certainly didn't. I would have thought it was a slam dunk. I thought as a juror, I would have gone in there. Okay, let's wait until after lunch. Let's at least get another free lunch. And then we vote to convict, right?
No. Oh, vote to convict. Yeah. But I think a lot of people, because they brought this up, Matthew, his defense lasted all of 6 minutes, you know, not a lot of there. And can you help talk us through why in these types of cases, these sex assault, he said, she said cases, that often can be the case?
Well, that's right. You know, to be fair to what Curtis said earlier, look, Bill, as a criminal defendant, is entitled to the benefit of the doubt. They have to prove his guilt beyond a reasonable
doubt. Oh, the good old presumption of innocence. I love it.
There is that. But, you know, getting back to it, these cases are extremely difficult. There's unfortunately, you know, and this is one of those cases that has some of the classic problems that prosecutors encounter in some of these types of sex crimes cases that I used to encounter when I was a prosecutor and doing sex.
What are those problems, Matthew?
Well, one of them is that she really delayed reporting the incident. And, you know, a lot of people just look skeptically upon that. And especially given that in that time period between when the event, you know, allegedly happened and the went to the police, there was a lot of contact between the two of them, a lot of phone calls. She was asking him for tickets to a show. And, you know, it makes people wonder if she has an agenda of some kind or if she just went to the police after whatever relationship she hoped would work out didn't work out. And she's just sort of rewriting history and saying it was a non-consensual act when it was a consensual act at the time. So these delays in reporting, and she has inconsistent statements here and there to law enforcement, those are the kind of things that can really, you know, damage a case. On the flip side, though, there's obviously a very powerful testimony of the other woman who says that she was victimized in almost the exact same way. And to me, you know, I would have thought that would have been enough to get a conviction here, frankly, just sort of showing a pattern of behavior on Cosby's behalf. But
And then also, Matthew, what about the testimony of the mother, who said that she got on the phone with Cosby, in which...
Yeah, he apologized to her.
Yes.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure what the breakdown is, if it's 11 people who want to convict and there's one holdout, or if it's 6-6 in terms of the vote count. But, you know, I think the other thing that I personally think is important in this whole case is, you know, if this was a consensual relationship between the two of them, then, you know, why is Bill giving drugs that make people woozy and knock them out?
Exactly. Like, who needs to Benadryl a willing sex partner?
Yeah, you don't need to drug a willing sex partner. I've never really been able to kind of reconcile why that was, you know, why having a consensual relationship and or how you would in this way. To me, there's only one purpose in Bill giving her those pills, and that is to make it difficult for her to knowingly and voluntarily consent to really.
Yeah, and if I'm on that jury, Matthew, that's my question is, well, could she even get, if your argument is it was consensual, aren't you undermining someone's ability to give knowledgeable, free and willing and voluntary consent by giving them, even if it was just Benadryl, aren't you taking away their capacity to really give consent?
Well, yes, that's right. Consent has to be knowing and voluntary, and, you know, you have to be aware and conscious. You can't be under the influence such that you're not making your own, you know, intelligent decisions. But also with the charges that he's really facing, there's three of them. One is a sexual assault without consent, sort of in a broad term. There's another one, a sexual assault while she is unconscious, that basically she's not fully awake. And there's another one where essentially it's a sexual assault where he's used drugs to inhibit her ability to consent, you know, to the pills in this case. So, you know, there's three different ways that he could get convicted here. And frankly, I think the latter is probably the strongest.
I agree. Pills. Yeah, that's the least threshold for him. Absolutely insane. Now, final question, Matthew. In your experience trying these cases as a prosecutor as well, what do you think the prosecutors here maybe could have done differently to have had this be the slam dunk that Curtis was anticipating?
That's a good question. I've thought about that. One of the things in the application that they made before this ball to have other witnesses testify, Yeah, I think that was a really critical step in this process. There's one witness who testified that she had been victimized in a similar way, but they were trying to get as many as, I think, a dozen. And, you know, if this goes to a retrial, for example, you may see that change on the second trial. You may see more witnesses being allowed to testify by having been victimized in a similar way, or fewer. You may see zero.
Oh, if it's zero, I think that's a big problem for the prosecution.
Well, if it were to change in either direction, you could see that being a game changer on a retrial.
Oh, 100%. I agree.
Now, I'm thinking to myself, I'm a juror. I've grown up with Cosby. Maybe I was a fan, but I was certainly well aware of the impact that he had on society. And I see him. He looks very humble, feeble. He's like blind. He really looks older than his age. Am I in my own mind as I adjudicate this and trying to figure out how I'm going to cast my vote as a juror member saying, man, he's looking at some steep charges here that will keep him locked up forever? It's sort of like that sort of like lessens the thought process in terms of convicting him of any of these charges.
Well, that's right. A jury is specifically instructed that they're not supposed to consider punishment when they're deciding guilt or innocence, but they do. Yeah, I mean, they do anyway. And an old man like him, with his health not appearing to be so good right now, sure, I'm sure there are jurors back there who say, are we basically condemning him to die in prison if we convict him? And, yeah, it could make people a little trigger shy, you know, a little afraid to pull the lever and say he's guilty in light of that. If he were a younger man, 30, maybe it'd be, or if he weren't a celebrity, maybe it'd be an easier path for the jury.
So many fascinating aspects of this case. Thanks so much for joining us, Matthew Galluzzo. When we come back, you know, certainly going deeper. I mean, is Bill Cosby, you know, being spared potentially a certain outcome because he's elderly and famous and rich and people feel some kind of way about locking up America's dad?
Or is it just a syndrome, especially what a lot of guys think of, that she's just looking for a hit at what was her sugar daddy? Oh. Another opportunity at sort of getting a hit at him. Not that she's making
she
money.
She already got some money.
Yeah, but she's going to get some money, particularly if he gets found guilty, because there will be the People magazine interview, potentially the book, the whole nine yards, you know. As opposed to if all of a sudden Cosby is either there's a deadlock jury, he's not found guilty. If he's found guilty, she becomes a better product to market. The licensing
Curtis,
of her as a product
cynical.
Is great.
How
that's just the way it is.
You? Oh, my God.
That becomes the vehicle for her book.
Or maybe,
for the movie.
Or maybe she's a woman that wants justice. But certainly, we'll see. Call us 1-800-848-WABC. 1-800-848-9222. This is the brand new Curtis and Ebony Show.
New for your midday.
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony. Exclusively.
Bring the noise.
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Why? Oh, why is this jury deadlocked in Pittsburgh? Should have been a slam dunk. Bill Cosby should have been looking at doing some serious time, and he may skate. To the phones we go. Ebony K. Williams, it's Daniel first up in the queue here, calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to WABC. Danny?
I think she ran out of money, and she knew her time was running out. And I think she must have knew people were going to come out of the woodwork, that somebody, all the people were touched.
So she knew, Daniel, that 60-plus women had a similar experience?
I think maybe she knew one or two of them. Maybe one or two.
One or two.
That was going to help her.
Only one or two, huh? Well, it's 60-some-odd women, gentlemen, that are saying that Cosby did very, very heinous things to them. I don't know what's so random about that. Let's go to Dominic from Long Island.
Yes, first of all, I agree that if he gets convicted, she can make $3 to $5 million. And I say
can you enlighten me to the arithmetic on that, Dominic?
Sure. I did the Buttafuoco case, and I got him $5 million, and he was guilty. I did Jessica Hahn back in 78, and I got her, I think, around $4 million.
How much can you get the brand new Curtis and Ebony Show, Dominic?
Well, you two are the stars of radio now.
That's really great. You know, Curtis is always looking for a payday, and I'm a cheapskate, so, you know, we got to get it.
Last point, if I may, had he not been who he is, he would have never been arrested these many years later. This trial is a tragedy, not because of what he did or didn't do, but the fact that they took this case from the history in the back of years and brought it now, after whatever deal he had made, This trial is a travesty, and it would never have happened if he wasn't Bill Cosby.
Well, he is Bill Cosby, Dominique, and certainly we will all see. The jury's been at it for 30 hours, and you got to keep going, Curtis. Judge says keep at it till you get a verdict. This is the brand new Curtis and Ebony Show.